together. It's February 1st, 8 o'clock, and would you call the roll, please?
Here. Representative Vasquez. Representative
Culver.
Representative Dummond. Here. Representative
Geisenhausen. Here.
Representative
Calico. Here.
Chair Keller.
Here.
Thank you.
We have two bills in front of us today. One of them is one we've never heard before. It's HB 157. And we're going to start there. Then we go to HB 102, which is a House Education Committee bill. And we have a CS to consider. I have no intention of passing either bill today. It's informational. Get your questions on the table, and we'll make sure we get everything answered. Okay, good. So with that, we're going to start with HB 157. And the sponsor is Representative Christ Tompkins. And so if you would introduce yourself for the record and explain what the bill does, and we'll go from there.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins, joined by Reed Magdans in our office, who has done a lot of the detail work with schools around Alaska and the Department of Education on this bill. And this bill is about creating or supporting immersion language charter schools in Alaska, and it's inspired by several schools that already exist in Alaska and have had difficulty working in the current structure, current regulatory environment, and we're basically trying to make it easier. We think immersion language education has been really successful where it demonstrated. There's a lot of parent interest in immersion language education, both in rural Alaska and in the Rail Belt. And we'd like to create pathways and structures that facilitate immersion language education. In particular, there are a few schools around Alaska. Of course, Iapoon, Litnorvik, and Bethel was in the news when it burned down, unfortunately, last year, but that's been a highly successful program in Bethel. Fronteras Charter School in the Matsu Valley, a Spanish language immersion school, has also been a notable example. And then also Rilke Schule, a German language immersion school in the Anchorage School District, are but three examples. In particular, we're looking at teacher certification in terms of those who are fluent to speak these languages but have difficulty at times getting into the classroom through the current framework of teacher certification. So this bill sort of touches on all those subjects, but the overall goal is to make immersion language charter schools an easier reality in Alaska for new schools that might come into existence, and also make it easier for schools presently in existence to operate.
Okay, before you proceed, just want to say that Representative Culver and Representative Vasquez were here and heard the presentation also. Before we move on, just to, if you would, describe a immersion school just in very general terms. You know, why, what is it? I mean, do they talk a particular language or the teachers? Or, you know, just give us some more, because a lot of people don't really know what they are.
Sure. a brief synopsis, and Reed may go into greater detail. Immersion language schools are schools where a language other than English is spoken predominantly, although often not exclusively in the classroom. It's often a blend between English and another language. So Rilke Schule is German, Fronteras it's Spanish, Iapoon Litnorvik it's Yupik. And so the idea is that it's generally at the primary elementary level, these schools. And the students, when they enter, they're sort of in a stage their formative development where they're just sort of sponges with languages, and it often creates bilingual and fluent students in both languages. But that's sort of the synopsis of an immersion language charter school.
Thank you. And don't be afraid to repeat. I mean, go ahead. If you would introduce yourself for the record so that you're on and give us your testimony.
Sure. This is Reed Magdans. I'm staff to Representative Christ Tompkins. I second all he says. I would just emphasize that immersion schooling is—it's not just teaching the language; it is teaching subjects through the language. So you're not just teaching Spanish at an immersion school; you're teaching often social studies and math, and maybe a history course you're also teaching those courses in Spanish. And then there are other courses during the day that are taught in English, so students pick up both languages.
Mr. Chair, if it's helpful, we could do a sectional analysis. Or
oh, please do, yeah. Go over the bill, because we're...
Yeah. Sure, yeah, I can do that. So sections, go through it in chunks, because some sections are kind of tied together. Sections 1 and 2 of the bill deal with language immersion charter schools, and what we're doing there is we're creating a subcategory of charter school called language immersion charter school. It's subject to all the same rules as existing charter schools, same procedure for applying, same funding formula. The only difference is that a language immersion charter school is required to spend half its instructional hours in a language other than English. So it holds these schools to a higher bar than it holds currently existing charter school, and it also requires that teachers at a language immersion charter school who are teaching in the target language, that is the non-English language, have to have mastery of that language and have to have some training in immersion language education. Anyone you talk to who does immersion will tell you it's a particular skill set to teach in an immersion classroom that is different than teaching in a classroom in the teacher's own native language. So that's section 1 and 2. Section 3 creates a language endorsement. This would be what would verify that teachers at language immersion schools have that language ability and have that immersion training. There's a similar certificate in Utah called the World Languages Endorsement. We're creating one for Alaska. Section 4, 5, and 6 deal with the state's limited teacher certificate program, more commonly known as Type M. That's what it is in regulation. We're making a couple changes there. Under the current law, limited teacher certificates are valid for vocational education, Alaska Native Language and Culture, and military science. What we do is we separate out the language portion of that into a new section, that's section 6, and create a limited certificate that is specific to languages. And we expand it so it is valid for all languages, not just Alaska Native languages. So this limited certificate could now be used by a school like Fronteras, Rilkashula, Anchorage School District's Japanese immersion programs. This is not specific to charter schools. So we separate out the language portion, expand it to all languages, and put a couple requirements on it that don't currently exist, namely that the person has to know the language, and if they're teaching a content area through another language, they have to have had immersion training. The other things we do to limited certificates is we make it at the request of some of our collaborators, including the principal of Fronteras. We make it a probationary certificate. It's initially valid for 1 year. The school will have to verify at the end of that year that the teacher has done a good job, basically, and then it can be extended. Currently, they're valid for 5 years right off the bat. And then the last change is that we remove the authority of the Board of Education to require additional academic training in order for renewal of these certificates. That's because these certificates are meant for people like in the trades. They're meant for, say, an Alaska Native elder. They're meant for people who for one reason or another are qualified teachers but unlikely to have a baccalaureate degree. It didn't seem fair to then make them make a, say, carpenter go back and take university classes before he could continue teaching carpentry. So that's sections 4 through 6. Section 7 deals with certifications by local tribal governments. These are very limited certificates. They apply only to classes taught in or through an Alaska Native language. It's premised on the idea that local communities in Alaska are the best suited to determine who is able to speak the local native language. They're of limited scope. The only place these certificates are automatically valid is at a language immersion charter school teaching in that Alaska native language. They could be valid in another public school, but only with the permission of the school board. School board would have to say, yes, we accept this certificate is valid in our district. And then Section 8, testing in language immersion educational programs. That comes to us from Hawaii and basically says that to the extent that federal law allows us, students who are learning in Spanish, in Yupik, in German, should be able to take their standardized tests in Spanish or Yupik or German. And that, again, is modeled after Hawaii, where they have Hawaiian immersion schools. And the schools got together and wrote a standardized test that was comparable to the English standards-based assessment in Hawaii. And we just wanted to, we felt it was a fair deal that if you should be tested in the language that you're learning in. So that's the bill. Please, if you have any follow-up questions, let me know.
We'll start with Representative Culver.
Oh, thank you. Representative Christ-Tompkins, I commend you for bringing this bill forward. I think it's way overdue. We've always kind of had a shortage of teachers in charter schools, immersion charter schools, to teach in the immersion language, and so I think this new certificate will be very beneficial to the students. We talked about the probationary period for the Type N certificate you're developing. Can you show us in the bill where that is and how that applies?
Right. Representative Culver, through the chair, you'll find that in Section 5, Subsection B, and Section 6, Subsection D. And that is, in reading from Section 5, this is page 4, line 24, a limited certificate issued under this section is initially valid for 1 year. The department may extend a limited certificate issued under this section for additional 4 years if the school board or REAA that requested the issuance of the certificate requests it be extended and certifies the person has demonstrated skills in classroom instruction, curriculum development, and student assessment.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
So it's the intent that each and every one of these certificates would have that probationary period?
Correct. That would be what the bill does.
Okay. Why are we giving the authority?
Follow-up, is there a new question? A new question?
Well, it's kind of on the same line. You follow-up, yes, sir. Okay. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. It's early. Follow-up on that. Section 5 of the bill gives the authority to a local school board to extend that certificate for an immersion teacher. In other sections of this bill, we're looking to the Academic Policy Council to make recommendations on the certificates, and so I'm wondering why in this section we're asking the local school board to approve the extension. So I kind of need to know the differences between that and why we're going to the school board. And I'll tell you why, because sometimes school boards and school administrations aren't necessarily super supportive of charter schools for whatever reason. And so I'm just a little concerned that we're going to have to go to the local school board without, you know, more involvement from the APC there. So please address that.
Yeah, Representative Culver, through the chair. Great question. Thank you for pointing that out. I read from Section 5, which applies to limited certificates for vocational education, Alaska Native culture, and military science. At least those would be the three under our bill. If you look at Section 6, Subsection D, the language-specific limited certificates, I probably should have mentioned this in the overview. One other thing this bill does with regards to limited certificates is it gives language immersion charter schools, and only language immersion charter schools, the ability to request a limited language certificate for their particular school. So if you establish the language immersion charter school, the academic policy committee of that school would be able to request a limited certificate. You would not have to go through the school board, and that is different than currently exists. Right now, school boards are the only entity authorized to request a limited certificate.
First on this topic, Representative Seaton, if it's on the certificate, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps it was in a earlier section, it looked like there was a 10-year limit on the certificates. But in here, where we're extending it for 5 years, what happens then? I mean, if we have language speakers that are effective teachers in the school, what is the purpose of the extension limitation?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the certificates fault. There would be the initial 1 year probationary period. They could be extended an additional 4 years. Following that, they would be extended per regulation. The last sentence of that subsection that I didn't read in response to Representative Culver's question says the certificate may be renewed in accordance with regulations adopted by the department. Currently, regulation provides for a 5-year renewal cycle. It seems likely to guess that would be the case for these as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Drummond. Well, before I go on, I apologize, but this is a clarification. It needs to go on the record. Well, first time we hear a bill, you know, we don't often adopt the version in front of us, but I just want to clarify that we are looking at 29LS0324/Sierra is the version that's in front of us, and I just want to make sure that everybody understood that. It's the first time that for us. But anyway, go ahead, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. The Anchorage School District has had language immersion schools in existence for decades before the charter school concept ever came to Alaska. Did you look at how those schools selected their teachers and ran their programs in relation to this? And a second part of that question is, does this certificate program impact those schools that are not charter schools but are language immersion schools?
I can offer a partial answer before passing the baton off to Reed. Anchorage School District was very much consulted, I believe one of the testifiers lined up today is from the World Languages Department of ASD, and you're right, those are the sort of original immersion programs in Alaska before Fronteras, Rolka Shula, et cetera, came into existence. The bill was crafted inclusive to both charter schools and non-charter schools, and we can comment further.
Representative Drummond, through the
Identify yourself, because your voices are similar, and we just make it easier in a recorder.
Okay, this is Reed Magdans again, Representative Drummond, through the chair. As Representative Christ Tompkins said, we've talked to Anchorage School District. They like the direction this bill is taking things. The limited certificates we discussed would be equally valid for any of Anchorage School District's immersion programs, just as they would be for a language immersion charter school, or really any charter school. If the Anchorage School Board requested a limited certificate in Japanese, that person could go teach in Anchorage School District's Japanese immersion program. And I believe, though I don't want to be certain, we'll probably hear more from the testifiers, I believe they have the same struggles finding fluent teachers for their programs.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton, well, first of all, let's go to Representative Vasquez, because you've already asked, and Representative Vasquez.
Okay. There is a technical glitch here on page. Okay. Five at the very top, lines 1 and 2. If indeed you're going to delete the requirement of additional academic training per page 4, lines 8 through 22, that's being deleted. And I'm not sure I agree with that, but you have it as deleted. Quote, the board may require a person issued a limited certificate to undertake academic training as may be required by the board by regulation and make satisfactory progress in the academic training. It appears that that would be deleted. It's in brackets.
Representative Vasquez, okay. Through the chair, that's correct.
You're making reference to that section on page 5, line 1 and 2. So if indeed you're going to delete that, that reference should also be deleted. It states here, the board may not require a condition. It starts at the very end of page 4, line 31. The board may not require it as a condition for extending or renewing a limited certificate under B of this section. That person completes additional academic training.
Reed?
In other words, you're deleting the requirement of additional academic training, but you're making reference to the additional academic training.
Representative Vasquez, through the chair, subsection C that you're referring to on line 31 of page 4 and lines 1 and 2 of page 5, that's in there because even though we deleted the other sentence you mentioned saying the board may require a person to undertake academic training, I believe the drafters put that in there because there are general kind of regulatory authorities in that chapter, and we wanted to make explicit that the board was prohibited from requiring additional academic training. We weren't certain that without adding that language, they couldn't require it anyways. And then in regards to the reference, I believe subsection B refers to the other added section dealing with renewals of certificates.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Somewhat on the same line, on page 5, line 29, in that section, subsection C, it says, a person who possesses a limited teacher certificate issued under this section may teach a subject other than the language in which the person demonstrates proficiency of this section if the person completes a course in language immersion. So it seems like this type M permit, which is there, is saying that you can now teach another subject that is in language arts, or whether it's in history, or whether it's in math, though you may not be qualified to teach that particular subject, and referencing back to the exclusion of the school board requiring that they have competency in those subjects, seems to be a disconnect, because we've got, I'm all on board with the immersion language section, but saying that if you know the language, you can teach any subject you want without being qualified to teach that subject seems to be the problem. So if there's an understanding of that, or it's a fix, I think, that needs to be in the bill, and I think several of us are addressing the same kind of issue.
And just for the context, for the record, the purpose of this time is to get the questions like that on the table. Thanks. And even though we may not resolve and get a perfect answer now, we have time because we're holding the bill over. So please pursue that, satisfy yourself, and we'll proceed from there. Any other questions? Representative Oliver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On line 10, page 6, it talks about renewing the certificate. It says the certificate may be renewed in accordance with regulations adopted by the department. We're referring to after the provisional license has been in effect for 1 year, an additional 4 years the license can be renewed for 4 years upon recommendation of the school board or the APC. Are we looking at existing or new promulgated regulations to implement this?
Representative Culver, through the chair, there would have to be some new regulations to deal with the language certificate in particular. There are existing regulations dealing with renewal of Type M limited certificates already, so I would say there would likely be the need for new regulations, but the template is there.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had comments back from, of course, Kenai Peninsula School District has had language immersion school in our schools. We have the Old Believer Russian villages. We have four of them in my district. And for the first, at least some of those schools, for the first couple of years, it's 100% in Russian, and then it goes to 50-50. And then I think at the fifth grade, it goes 100% English. So, you know, I appreciate this bill. I want to make sure that when we're specifying charter school, there's no unintended limitation on school districts by the boards adopting language immersion programs within individual schools if they're not a charter school.
Reed?
Sure. Jonathan?
Yeah. Sure. For the record, Representative Christ Tompkins, that's certainly the intent, Representative Seaton, both with existing programs in Anchorage School District that aren't standalone charter schools, and I guess also what you just mentioned, I was actually not aware, although that does make sense knowing this Old Believer Russian villages, that there were immersion programs within the Kenai Peninsula School District. I don't believe it impinges on school districts' ability to operate programs within the school district, and Reed may see a different angle, but we can certainly confirm and, if nothing else, talk with the Kenai Peninsula School District to make sure.
And one follow-up.
Follow-up.
And just as you're doing that, would you make sure that the language is such that the Type M certificate that's being allowed for the charter school is applicable for the regular schools if the school board so desires? Thank you.
Okay. I want to boil on the question, unless that is it on the same topic, because if it is, please go ahead.
It's close to that.
Okay, yeah. Okay, great.
Chairman, thank
yeah.
you. And I see in what Representative Seaton just described as an instructional model is a little different here in Section 2 of the bill, where the requirement is 50% of the instructional hours for each grade level. And that's referenced a couple times in Section 2. Is that sounds different than the model that Representative Seaton just described, and I was just curious, is that 50%, is that derived from other immersion schools, or?
Representative Christ Tompkins, for the record, Representative Tallarico through the chair, that's something we've had some conversation about. Reed could speak to it more, but in existing immersion schools, the goal is immersion and to the end of creating fluency for students, and usually it's a blend, and the blend sort of decreases with time. We've had conversations about how aspirational that number would be or how strictly it might be enforced, mostly given existing schools and the blend that they adopt, for instance, those that Representative Seaton mentioned. Reed could speak more to what's being proposed in this legislation, though.
Yeah, for the record, Reed Magdans, Representative Tallarico through the chair. The 50% number comes from our research on other immersion programs around the country and the world. Virtually all of them have at least a 50% standard in the grades that they're teaching immersion. It varies significantly from school to school. Some teach in the foreign language 100% of the time until third, fourth, fifth grade, and then start blending down. Others start 50-50 from the very beginning. I believe that is how Fronteras works. So there's a wide range, but the general consensus seemed to be that to be an effective immersion school, at least at the some of the years had to be 50-50.
Mm-hmm. I want to put a question on the record and get your response, and I think it's one that's in a lot of people's minds. So English is the official language in the United States of America, and our proficiency in our schools on language skills isn't anything really to brag about compared to the other states. My question really is, should there be something in here that clarifies that the English, I know that you'll be able to tell me that that generally speaking, in practice, this helps the English language because it makes for language awareness. But I'm wondering if we shouldn't have something in the bill that acknowledges the fact that English is a very, very primary functional goal.
Sure. For the record, Representative Christ Tompkins, Chair Keller, I think there's some implicit assumptions in the bill that, you know, perhaps could be made explicit. I mean, first of all, meeting standards for language proficiency, of course, in English, is certainly one of them. The other assumption is that in pretty much every Alaska community, kids are surrounded by English and will be fairly or entirely fluent in English. And the idea is to, while they're in that sort of formative stage and can sponge up other languages, that immersion schools offer that opportunity in that sort of critical age window. But your point is well taken, and I think the fundamental idea behind immersion charter schools and immersion programs in general is that it's really fundamentally additive and doesn't displace existing language acquisition and learning, that of English. But your point is well taken, and I think much of that is implicit in the thinking behind language and immersion programs.
And I know it was just to get the questions on the table, but I just want you to know that I'll be looking for language to make that very clear in the bill. If we can work something out, that'd be great. Any other questions?
I do.
Vasquez and Representative Vasquez, and then Representative Culver.
Okay, page 7, lines 11 through 15. As worded, someone could have been convicted. This only restricts the license to those convicted of basically sexual crimes. But technically, somebody could have been accused and convicted of kidnapping under 11.41300, human trafficking under 11.41.360, assault in the first degree, 11.41.200, and they still could get a teacher certificate the way this is written. It's got a, you know, that doesn't make sense. These are serious crimes.
And do you want to respond to that now, or just you can answer to us back on that?
Representative Vasquez, through the chair, that language was drawn from the existing statutes that exist for teacher certification in I believe it's 1420.020. It's certainly worth a look back to make sure that we are indeed covering everything that is covered by our existing teacher certificates. And this is Reed Magdans.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. I guess we may have to go back and not only revamp this, but revamp the teacher certification.
Do you have a follow-up?
But this is similar. It's right here. Line 15. It states whether the person's convicted in, quote, in another jurisdiction with elements similar to an offense described in this subsection. Traditionally, the criminal division has dealt with this. In extradition cases, it is an absolute nightmare. I would suggest you talk to the deputy commissioner over at the criminal division and see if they have since, when I was a prosecutor, this was a nightmare. Maybe since they have refined this issue and maybe there's additional language we need to insert there. But how do you compare what happens to another jurisdiction in criminal law to what our statutes are? Can be quite interesting and quite complicated. So I would like to see feedback from the criminal division.
Okay. And you'll get that for us, Representative Culver.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got one on this Section 7 on the native certificate, and then I wanted to ask one on the assessments. Representative Christ Tompkins, it says under on line 19 and 20, Section 7, page 6, Alaska Native Tribe submits a description of the Alaska Native Tribe certification procedures to the department. I guess I'm just kind of wondering how this is something new. We're going to create a Native Language and Culture certificate, right? how we get that academic backup for that. Is this something that's going to have to be worked out by regulation through the department?
Representative Pulver, through the chair, speaking as Representative Christ Tompkins, I guess on a general level, the problem that we're trying to engage with is that there's not really sort of formal or academic procedures for defining proficiency of many Alaska Native languages. And, you know, if you have a fluent speaker in a community where they're trying to pass on that language, it's not like University of Kansas has a battery of tests that, you know, you can run someone through, and really the best measure of fluency for that particular language is often, you know, others in that community who speak that language and are fluent in that language. As to the mechanics of that, I'll defer to Reed to that aspect.
It's Representative Culver through the chair. We had a discussion in part about this with the Department of Education last week. They mentioned some of the same thoughts that you just did, that it wasn't, that the statute as written doesn't really well define what sort of program we're looking at here. I think we're going to be doing some additional thinking on that to make sure everyone understands what we're trying to do, and we welcome your feedback and any other of the committee members on that.
And Reed, work with Representative Culver on that question, and
Another question.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is, I guess, the assessment section, and so your final section of the bill, Section 8, allows students to take, in immersion programs, to take standards-based assessments in the language that they're being taught in the immersion program. Can you maybe go over if that's happening in any of our existing immersion schools, and what the logistics and hurdles might be to accomplishing that? Do we have tests prepared in Spanish and German? I know we have Japanese in Sand Lake. What do we have off the shelf, and what's it going to take to create assessments that are going to work for these students?
Representative Culver, through the chair, for the record, speaking as Representative Christ Tompkins. After, again, a conversation with the Department of Education last week, we might be looking at dropping that section from this legislation for fiscally motivated reasons, among others. But to your question, that was motivated. We're looking across the country at other places and jurisdictions where immersion language programming has been really successful in creating students who are fluent in those languages, and so that particular provision was inspired by Hawaii. So that's where it came from originally. But again, after that conversation with the Department of Education, we might be looking at minimalizing the bill, so to speak, and that section being an example.
Did you?
Oh, brief follow-up. So, okay. So, you know, the whole intent, I think, of the immersion curriculum is to work, teach, learn in that language. And so if we are going to go strictly back to English, it may be problematic for those students, although we do, that's what we're testing for, proficiency in language arts.
Right.
Let's take another look at that. I think the chair has identified that there's some issues there, that we don't want to mandate you have to do all this English, but then again, you want to make sure your scores are good coming out of that, and maybe we look to the principals that are already dealing with that right now for how that's really playing out. So maybe we can get that from the bottom up rather than the top down.
Other questions? We have, just so the committee knows, that we have four, I think, signed up to testify off net, and I don't know, is there anybody in the room? Okay, nobody in the room at this point. Of course, the department is here if you have questions for them. Any other questions? I have one. It's kind of an observation, but it's a question, too, because I haven't looked at it in enough detail to be real sure myself. But on page 4, the section 5 about the probationary certificate, the department may, you know, do this probationary certificate. And then you look ahead on page 5 there in the section that applies to the immersion schools on page 5, line 12, the department shall issue. And the effect of that, as I understand it, this is the observation I want you to correct if I'm wrong. The effect of that choice of language is that the department, to limit the department power to limit the probationary certification. So if it isn't in 1 through 4, then they shall, you know, issue it. And so I part of the reason for observing that is that we, you know, just an encouragement to the committee to look at those four things and make sure they're inclusive enough. But also, and I think this is not really a question but an observation, if you look ahead to section 7 there about the tribal certification, I think that that is clearly may and is not under the umbrella of the shall that's on page 5, line 12. Now, if that was, if I raised questions that I should have asked here and that helped me out, observation.
Yes, this is Reed Magdans for the record. Chair Keller, you're right, the language you identified on page 5, line 12, the department shall issue a limited teacher certificate. I'm not sure that was so much a deliberate choice as that's how it was drafted. We're not wedded to that. And I would note that on page 6, line 4 in subsection D, which deals with the renewal language, of the language limited certificate matches that of the renewal language of the regular limited certificate. So there is that shell in subsection B. I think we'd be happy to make it may to just make everything line up.
Well, let's look at it further because, like I say, I don't really understand the ramifications. So, any other questions? Okay, we'll set this bill aside. And Monday morning. Please stay there, and because I don't think we have anybody in the room, but we have four online. So with the bill LS or the bill is still before us, version S, and we have online. First, we're going to start with Susan Schmidt, Executive Director, Anchorage. If you would identify yourself and give us your testimony.
Hello, my name is Susan Schmidt. I'm the Executive Director of Staffing and Operations for the Anchorage School District.
Go ahead and give us your testimony, please. Thank you.
Okay. And I'd like to say hello to Representative Harriet Drummond, and thank you very much for your support of this as well. I am a retired Spanish immersion principal from Chugiak Elementary School, and now in my new role as staffing and operations, I've realized how incredibly hard it is to find qualified, certified native language speakers for the Anchorage School District. And as one of the larger districts, it would seem that that may be easier. However, it's quite difficult. I can only imagine the difficulty that other smaller districts have as well. As a former immersion principal for the past 12 years, our test scores are incredible. The students are fluent in both languages, whatever the target language is, and English by fourth grade. They speak with no accent. English is typically the primary language. We are partial immersion programs in the Anchorage School District, meaning that the students come to school, they speak primarily English in the home, and their English scores, they're tested in English, and their English test scores, language arts, math, science, are all incredibly high. And I think it is because of that extra language instruction that they're getting. Also with me is Brandon Locke, the Director of World Languages, and he can support as well as offer more information as far as the world language, the benefits of world languages. In other countries, obviously, the second language, primarily English, is also offered. So those students are coming out being bilingual in two, sometimes three languages. Alaska, besides Utah, I would say Alaska is on the cutting edge of the of offering language immersion programs, and we would like to continue that. We'd like to see that grow. It is just nothing but a benefit for a global economy and a global world.
Thank you, Susan. Please stand by, and we'll see if the committee has questions after Brandon testifies. Brandon, if you would, identify yourself for the record and tell us who you represent and give us your testimony.
Hi, thank you. My name is Brandon Locke, and I am the Director of World Languages for the Anchorage School District.
Please proceed. Go ahead with your testimony.
Well, thank you for your time today. I just wanted to kind of highlight what Susan said a moment ago, and obviously the Anchorage School District is the largest district in the state. We have got roughly 2,500 students in our language immersion programs, K through 12. Our Japanese program is celebrating its 26th year this year. We also have two Spanish immersion programs. We have the nation's first Russian immersion program. Obviously, we've got the Rilke Schule German Charter School, and then we're excited to be beginning Chinese, Mandarin Chinese immersion next year with the kindergarten, adding a grade every year. The programs in our district follow a partial model, a 50-50 model, if you will, where 50% of the day that the students are taught content by a native or near-native speaker of the target language, and generally that content is science, social studies, and then the target language arts, for example, Spanish language arts. The other half of the day, they're taught in English by an English-speaking teacher, and they are taught their English language arts as well as math in most cases. I know earlier somebody had mentioned referencing a different model, like a full immersion model, and that's where generally all of the content is taught in the target language with the exception of the pull-out classes like art and music, and then also English. The students leave the immersion classroom and then they go and are taught English by an English teaching specialist. That is not what we have in Anchorage. And so, therefore, our students, I believe, are benefiting from both having a native English speaker teach the English language arts and support that content while having a native speaker of the target language teaching the content in that target language. It's really also important to notice that many of the immersion teachers come from other fields. So they come into education, oftentimes we find them, and they'll come from a background in engineering or in medicine, for example. We have one Spanish immersion teacher who is an architect. And so these people are educated, but they don't necessarily have the English proficiency to be able to pass some of those basic competency tests like the Praxis 1 or the CASE test, which is required for initial certification. We're hiring these folks because of their ability to speak fluently in a native language, but yet we are requiring them to pass a reading and a writing test in English in order to get their initial certification, which obviously is problematic. But again, I just want to say that we have some really great programs here, and I'm excited about beginning Chinese, and as Susan said, I believe that Alaska really is on the cutting edge of immersion. We are known all over the world. Well, I shouldn't say that. We are definitely known all over the country for having some amazing language immersion programs, and we are recognized in a book by Dr. Helena Curtin called Languages and Learners, and our programs are identified in there as being really good best practice models. So anything that you can do to help support this in terms of teacher certification, we would greatly appreciate, because we think that it's really truly in the best interest of our students. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon. Any questions for Susan or Brandon?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton?
And I hope I understood the presentation correctly, but I thought that there was something in there that some of these specialized provisional certificates were only good in the district where they were offered, or where they were where the Native tribe certified them from, or the REAA. If that was correct, that would impinge upon the ability of other districts to utilize that. So I guess I'm wanting to get some feedback from the
sponsor.
From the sponsor, that may have been an incorrect interpretation I had from the presentation as well.
Okay. Did you have a comment now on that? Or you sure can. Reed?
For the record, this is Reed Magdans, Representative Seaton through the chair. You are correct about that with regards to all the certificates in here. For the limited certificate, if Anchorage School District wanted a teacher for its Russian immersion program, they would have to request a limited certificate from the department. If that teacher then wanted to teach at a school in your district, the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District would have to request a limited certificate from the department. The limited certificates are valid only for the district that requested that certificate.
Okay.
And a clarification, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
And so I guess what I'm trying to do is figure out what the testifier indicated was they have trouble finding people with native language skills proficient to teach. And I'm just trying to figure out the nexus of that versus something where if you were in an REAA and they applied for a limited or certified someone for a limited teaching certificate, whether that person would be able to go to Anchorage where they would not possibly have the ability to make that certification or that determination.
It's a valid question, and we'll explore that and talk further about it, and thank you for bringing it up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the reason I'm bringing it up is because the person testifying from Anchorage said that they have trouble getting people, and this would help them, but I want to make sure that there's not a blockage there where they couldn't get that, use that limit.
It's a good question. Let's consider it and see where it goes. Okay, Susan and Brandon, thank you for taking time to call in. We're going to go to Catherine Gardner from Matsu.
Hello. Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we hear you. Good. Go ahead and identify yourself and then go ahead and give us your testimony.
Okay. Good morning, Representative Keller and members of the House Education Committee. My name is Catherine Gardner. I am the Executive Director of Human Resources for the Matsu Borough School District, and I'm speaking to you today to express my support for House Bill 157. Specifically, I want to speak to those amendments and additions which pertain to the requirements of certification for teachers of immersion programs. The Matsu School District supports education choice as a fundamental part of our school system. We are proud that Frontera Spanish Immersion Charter School is one of the many successful options available to families in our borough. I can speak from my experience in supporting the hiring at Frontera that adequately staffing an immersion school is a challenging task under the current regulatory landscape in Alaska. Skilled language and culture teachers are not readily found in the typical labor market, and many times individuals who possess the required knowledge of the language or the culture are not licensed teachers. The flexibility proposed in House Bill 157 recognizes these realities for us and supports alternative methods to teacher certification, similarly to how we do for other non-traditional teacher experts, say in career and technical education. I would ask that the committee also give adequate consideration to an extended effective date for the provisions which impact current teachers and programs, though some of the stated requirements for operation of a charter school will not be difficult for us to demonstrate. Some may require some additional time to show compliance. For example, the addition of the language immersion endorsement for all existing language immersion teachers teaching in the school's designated language. I also want to express my support for your looking deeper into the certification process for language immersion teachers, as raised by some of the questions which have been asked today, speaking to the rigor of the certification renewal process. Though we support additional flexibility for our district and our immersion program, we are interested in hiring the best teachers. And as you've recognized, immersion teachers are teaching traditional subjects in the immersion language, not simply the language itself. So making sure that the requirements for renewal and certification are consistent with other practitioners while also keeping in mind some of what's been mentioned today, the challenges with bringing people into our system whose English proficiency may be limited. Again, thank you for your consideration of House Bill 157, and I'd be happy to answer any questions which anyone may have.
Thank you, Catherine. I don't see any questions at this time, but I thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Jennifer Hutchins, from also from Nemadsu, from Fronteras. Hello, Jennifer, if you would identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
You bet. Good morning. My name is Jennifer Hutchins, and I am in the middle of my fifth year as the principal of Fronteras Spanish Immersion Charter School in the Nemadsu Valley. I, as you can imagine, really super support this bill going through. You've heard the challenges from not only Susan as the former principal for over a decade of an immersion school, but finding folks who speak the language is just extremely difficult. We have folks that come to us wanting to work in our school who either have some classroom experience or come from another background, such as nursing, engineering. We've had, they don't have the certification, but they have a desire to share their culture, their language, and we are prohibited in hiring them and getting their wealth of knowledge and their talent. Many are just natural teachers because they don't have the certification. Another issue brought up that needs to really be looked at is how once a native speaker has come to us and has gone through the process of becoming a teacher, their testing that has to take place is not in their native language, and that prohibits them, although they might be extremely talented and just wonderful with children. You know, something was mentioned about the English language, it being, of course, our language that we speak here. There are standards that must be followed that every teacher is responsible for and every administrator is responsible for ensuring that they are being taught in the classrooms. One of the largest responsibilities an administrator has is, of course, making sure that the folks in the classrooms are solid, they are doing their job, and they are appropriate with students and can actually teach the curriculum. It's our job whether a teacher is an English native speaker or, in our instance, a Spanish native speaker, to coach them to ensure that they are qualified to be in the classroom on several levels, and it's our job to remove them when they're not. So whether they have gone through the proper education process or not, sadly, sometimes teachers who have gone through the proper channels still are not qualified to be in. So that it will always be a monitoring system that administrator has responsibility for. We have great support from not only our leadership at our school district level, but also from the Anchorage School District. You heard Brandon Locke speak. He has actually, on our behalf, went out and during his recruiting efforts has included our school seeking teachers for us to no avail this most recent time. Although he was trying to help us, it is extremely difficult, even out of state, to identify folks who are qualified and then who also want to make the move to Alaska. So I think when we have folks that want to, that are native speakers and that want to be in a classroom, they want to be part of sharing their culture and their language and fulfilling the requirements we have, we need to have a way to allow them to do that and get all the coaching that they possibly can and be able to help grow immersion. We are the only immersion school right now in the Nemadsu Valley. We would love to see other languages come in, but hiring and finding folks that meet all the requirements that are currently in place is extremely difficult. We need to work together. I love this bill. It really addresses the key components. Some great questions have been brought up that need to be addressed, of course, but I would really like to see this bill move forward. So I highly support it. The hiring is really such a stressful piece of an immersion school and the school district. So I guess if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer anything.
We do have one. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. In our packet, we have a couple of written articles, but as far as the data of comparative success of charter schools, we don't have anything, I mean, not of charter schools, of language immersion schools, we don't have any data to support that. So if you have any from the Nemadsu where you're immersion school has been, and I'm putting this on the record for other folks as well, if they have any data showing the success of their program, you know, so we have a comparative.
I am so sorry, the phone is cutting out. I only probably got about 50% of that.
Jennifer, he's asking for documentation of how good Frontieris and other good people testifying today, how it's working, the positive impact. And I know this isn't data, but I sure appreciate Frontieris and your success and your reputation in our community, and thank you for your work. Did I capture your question, Representative Stephen?
You did, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to make sure that our packet is complete so that we're proposing to accentuate a model that has proven success. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no further questions, again, thank you, Jennifer. Now we will set the bill aside until in the future hearing, and we'll move to HB 102. Vice Chair Vasquez.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move to adopt CS HS 102 version LS0519/W as a working copy.
And Mr. Chairman,
well, isn't that easier? I don't see any objection to going to W, but it's with full understanding that the bill is not moving today. The commissioner hasn't even had time to process it, and it's just to kind of give us a update on where we're at on our bill, HB 102. So if there is no objection, I would like to start with version W and Commissioner Seaton. I called you Commissioner because the last 2 days I've been chairing a committee with 12 commissioners. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, this draft is quite different from the previous version, and rather than request the changes, it seems like we would be better off starting with an explanation of this bill, of the CS, as if it was a new bill, because there's so many changes between the two versions. I'm wondering whether we can, you've asked for adoption, and so I'm just saying that. But I would like to get a presentation of this bill because it's so vastly different than the previous one.
Representative Seaton, that is the intent, and thank you for clarifying for that for the record. Representative Culver.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. I'm just kind of shuffling through all the different versions of this bill. And I haven't found the one on our desk was /I, and I haven't located a W yet. Just so
we're going easy until we make sure we all have the right copy in front of us. And the confusion is mine. I apologize. It is Monday morning. Can I have a motion to rescind the motion to adopt version W?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I move to rescind the previous motion to adopt the working document version W.
And
move that we, for our working document, use 29-LS0519/I. Working document.
No objection, we have version India in front of us, and I apologize for my confusion. With that, I'm going to ask my staff, Janet Hogan and Evelyn, to explain where we're at.
Good morning, education members and Chair Keller. For this record, I'm Janet Hogan, staff to Representative Keller and committee aide for education. With me today, I have Evelyn Aslop with the North Star Behavioral Treatment Center. And we're going to be going through where we have been in the past and where we plan to go in the future with the residential psychiatric treatment centers with the component of the education, and that we're trying to bring equity to all these special needs students. So we have, I believe, Mike Lyons is going to be on the line to give us the history of where we've been and where we plan to go from. So, Mike Lyons, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Did you want to go to his testimony first, Janet?
I believe so. And
okay.
Then we will.
Mike, identify yourself for the record and give us some guidance here as far as where we're at with HB 102. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Keller and members of the Education Committee. My name is Michael Lyons, and I am the Vice President of Specialty Education for Universal Health Services and North Star Behavioral Health Systems in Anchorage. Thank you for the opportunity to update the committee regarding the proposed amendment to House Bill 102 and our efforts since last April 15th when Chairman Keller appointed a subcommittee consisting of Representative Drummond, Representative Tallarico, and Representative Vasquez. The subcommittee chaired by Representative Vasquez was asked by Chairman Keller to further study issues related to educational services in residential psychiatric treatment centers. We would like to take this moment to thank Representative Vasquez, Representative Drummond, Representative Tallarico for their time this past year, research, and the visit to North Star this past year. We firmly believe that education is the civil rights issue of our time, and that every child, including children with mental illness, deserves an equal opportunity to succeed in school. State and federal law is clear that no matter where children live, all children are entitled to a free and appropriate public education that is comparable, equitable, and adequate. For the past 6 years, my colleagues and I have dedicated ourselves to bring awareness to how some of the state's most vulnerable children have been receiving substandard educational services while seeking, in some cases, life-saving mental health treatment. In addition to bringing awareness, we continue to put forth solutions that will dramatically improve the educational services for a class of children who so desperately need a voice. In order to give you all a broader understanding of why we believe this year's committee substitute to House Bill 102 is a needed solution, I would like to share with you some of the most recent events since last April and our efforts to work collaboratively with the Anchorage School District, or better known as ASD. In April of 2015, representatives from North Star and ASD began meeting to discuss program needs, best practices, measurable outcomes, service delivery, and ways to work more collaboratively with one another. The first two meetings were attended by the Commissioner of Education, who helped set the framework for future discussions. Meeting participants from ASD included several high-level district administrators, Mr. Jerry Kochi, who was appointed acting principal of special schools in July. Sadly and unexpectedly, Mr. Kochi passed away in December. Mr. Kochi was a lifelong educator who helped hundreds, if not thousands, of children throughout his tenure and hit the ground running upon coming to North Star. Mr. Coche will be dearly missed by so many, and we truly appreciate all his efforts while working for the children at North Star last year. The spirit of the meetings between ASD and North Star has been very collegial, with a strong focus on program enhancement, accountability, and communication. No doubt both organizations recognize that communication and collaboration is critical to addressing issues and the overall success of the program. As of January 2016, there have been over 20 meetings between the two organizations, and that's been fantastic. In addition to the ongoing operational meetings between North Star and ASD, representatives from the Education Subcommittee, including Representative Vasquez, Representative Tallarico, and Representative Drummond, visited the facility on September 16th. The ASD School Board President visited on December 4th, and the Commissioner of Education visited on January 12, 2016. We sincerely thank everyone for taking the time to visit and see the program firsthand. There is no doubt that touring the facility humanizes the hard work of our professional team, as well as the resiliency, courage, strength, and determination of our patients and students. To give you a context of our student population, each fall ASD counts the number of students in each school setting across the district. Students at North Star, currently under the Whaley Center, the district special education center. And according to ASD, there was a total of 113 students counted, of over which 50% are classified as receiving special education services. I will speak a bit more about special education services later, but when a special education student is admitted to North Star, the current ASD practice is to amend the student's IEP to reflect consultative services. Under this practice, we do not believe that special education students are receiving the appropriate level of special education service as prescribed by IEP, their previous IEP teams, and this needs to be addressed immediately. Going back to our initial meetings and in preparation for our second meeting on April 28, 2015, North Star simply asked if ASD could bring the district's plan for addressing the following areas. Number one, a communication plan that will outline strategies for strengthening collaboration and information sharing between ASD, North Star, parents, students, resident school districts, and other stakeholders. We also asked for the 2015-2016 staffing plan, including teacher certification areas. Number three, we asked for the curriculum model, including a master schedule reflecting the amount of time for direct instruction and online instruction. We also asked for the administrative supervision plan with a schedule for providing on-site management and communication with families, treatment teams, resident school districts, and students. We also asked for policies and procedures for admissions, IEP teams, and transitions. We also asked for a list of outcome measures that would be tracked by ASD so that we could share those with stakeholders throughout the school improvement plan process. And lastly, we asked for a program budget, including allocations for materials, resources, and equipment. All these areas are usually considered standard operating items that all schools should have in place and served as a good starting point for ASD and North Star to evaluate the current operating system and steer future conversations. Recognizing that the school's master schedule, staffing plan, and curriculum model needed intense focus and would require the district to assign additional resources, North Star knew it was critical to get further clarification on how the district was going to handle each of these areas since last April. Throughout our discussions and heading into the late spring and early summer, we never received concrete information to the request just mentioned. We strongly believe that without the above items in place, it was going to be very challenging to start the new school year, and the students' education was going to be compromised. As the 2015-2016 school year evolved, it was important to recognize where progress has been made. We have been very complimentary and grateful to ASD for areas that they have improved upon. However, with that said, and although well-intended, ASD's most recent efforts have not been proactively implemented without constant prodding and follow-up from North Star. I'd like to take this opportunity to share with you some of the areas of progress emerging from the collaboration to date. First of all, ASD hired an acting principal separate from the Whaley Center to oversee the district's special schools. Mr. Jerry Coche transitioned to this position in late July. Due to the passing of Mr. Coche, ASD is currently recruiting to fill this position. The transition counselor position was filled as of September 11th. As you may recall, we learned about this position being allocated to North Star last year through a Freedom of Information Act request, but the allocation previously never served the students of North Star. ASD hired four new teachers this school year, and two new teaching assistants were hired. A new individualized learning plan, which we refer to as an ILP, was authored by ASD to set the course of each patient's educational experience at North Star. 95 new laptop computers were ordered, and the internet bandwidth was increased to accommodate the online learning program. And instructional hours were increased through the expanded master schedule. Throughout the first semester, we also shared with ASD our continued list of ongoing concerns that should have been addressed prior to the school year beginning and still need immediate attention. First of all, we need to establish the level of on-site services provided by the acting principal assigned to all special purpose schools to the access of parents, students, teachers, and stakeholders. Student course schedules listing the actual courses students are registered in. Full registration to the APEX online course system. Completion of each student's ILP, further technologically assessment and plan, identification of outcome measures, a curriculum assessment plan, streamlining of the enrollment process, intake course registration, transition policies and procedures, and AIMS web testing. The goal has always been and will continue to be to serve every student with excellence as a standard. Education is a universal right, and student education should never be compromised. Although progress has been made in some areas, many students did not receive an appropriate, comparable, and adequate educational experience the first semester. In fact, it was disheartening that this class of children did not have the resources they should have in a timely manner. Specifically, from the onset, North Star described the lack of technology that was not available to students in order to participate in the district's online learning program. During the Education Committee tour of North Star on September 16th, they heard firsthand from the district's IT representative that the infrastructure was inadequate and there were less than 20 functioning computers. However, after the tour, everyone was encouraged at the working lunch when acting principal Mr. Kocher reported that he was given immediate authority for 54 computers and a temporary bandwidth solution. By this time, 1 month of school had already passed, and not only did students not have access, they didn't have course schedules, nor were any of the individualized learning plans completed. In the spirit of collaboration, both organizations continued to move forward in hopes that the situation would be rectified immediately. The problem grew worse over the next 2 months, and on November 6, 2015, North Star reported to ASD its frustration that the promised computers were still not delivered, bandwidth was not increased, and students did not have access to the online APEX system that they were supposed to be taking classes in. When questioned, the acting principal stated that the district had tabled the plan. Sensing North Star's shock and disappointment, ASD delivered 60 computers that same afternoon and commissioned the IT department to begin upgrading the bandwidth in order to allow students to participate in their classes online. Sadly, this class of children did not receive appropriate, equitable, and adequate educational services the first semester. North Star respectfully raised concerns regarding students not having course schedules and that their transcripts were not reviewed or aligned to their previous placement. Furthermore, North Star sought help in understanding why only 5 ILPs were completed to date and the district's procedure to move all special education students to a consultative model. These concerns and priority needs were shared in full transparency with ASD's board chairman, the Commissioner of Education, and ASD administration. ASD chose not to respond in writing to these concerns. However, North Star did review the list in a meeting with ASD to be open with the reflection and reassessment process. The question we have to ask is, if this happens in any other school, wouldn't there be outrage for a failure to provide an adequate education, let alone to this vulnerable class of children? Members of the House Committee, providing educational services for students residing in a RPTC is a specialty service that must integrate a variety of different disciplines, including medical, educational, clinical, behavioral, recreational, and transitional services. Because the needs of the students are so complex and require such individualization, it is more appropriate in some instances to give RTTCs the option to serve as an educational services provider and contract with the local school district. Northstar presented a draft contract for ASC review, and ASC stated that they were not interested in contracting with Northstar to provide the educational services. After reviewing the course of events the past several years, it appears to be a logical next step is to allow a three-year pilot project, and pilot project is emphasized, for RPTCs to become an educational service provider. This proposal was presented to the Commissioner of Education for his review and input. Under this legislation, a participating RPTC would be required to comply with over 20 accountability standards, including a comprehensive financial audit. The RPTC would also be required to report back to the legislature its outcome measures each school year, and we think this will dramatically improve services to children and increase academic accountability. Current law permits school districts to contract with educational service providers approved and accredited by the Department of Education as found within existing Alaska statute 14.03.083. The amendment to AS 1403-083 would authorize school districts to contract with RTTCs to provide educational services for children confined to their facility by a court or physician's order for treatment of a diagnosed mental illness. There are a total of 12 RTTCs statewide, which could qualify treating approximately 250 to 300 students. We expect only a few of the larger facilities will consider to act on this legislation that's affecting a very small number of students. Fairbanks School District already has such a contract with the Boys and Girls Home of Alaska, which is working well for its 24 patients. Under the bill, the process would entail an RPTC, who desired to provide educational services in the facility, present a proposed contract to the district. If the district and RPTC couldn't reach an agreement within 30 days, the RPTC could present the proposed contract to the Commissioner of Education, similar to the charter school appeal process. Another big reason this legislation is so important is that we recently asked ASD where we could find the preliminary budget allocations for Northstar being presented to the school board at its first hearing February 1st for the 2016-2017 school year, and we were told we would not be able to see where it was and what was being presented to the board for serving students at Northstar next year. In the spirit of transparency, we find this very troubling, and again, it shows that this class of children is not being appropriately addressed. Unless we stay vigilant and vocal, this class of children will continue to be treated unfairly and inadequately. We have often pondered what the Office of Civil Rights would think regarding how children with mental illness continue to be served. But we know the resolution rests here with our local officials. In closing, we would appreciate your support and respectfully ask for the movement on House Bill 102 and its committee substitute. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael. And if we have questions as we go through the bill, we'll be in contact. I just want to say on the record that thank you to Representative Drummond and Representative Talrico and Representative Vasquez. This is really helpful to us to have you hands-on there. And so any questions at this time for Michael, realizing that he'll be available? Okay. What we're going to do then is go to my staff and see if you have something or if Evelyn has something that you want to add at this time, and then we'll go to, there's two individuals on from the Anchorage School District. So.
Okay. Representative Keller, Chair Keller, I'm going to abdicate to Evelyn Alsop.
Okay. And from Northstar, Evelyn, if you would identify yourself and give us your testimony. And the thanks also, of course, goes to you, Evelyn, and to Mike. I know you've been spent a lot of time on this, and we are delighted with this progress. Go ahead.
I appreciate that. Chairman Keller. Good morning, Chairman Keller and members of the Education Committee. My name is Evelyn Alsop, and I am the Director of Education for Northstar Behavioral Health in Anchorage. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to come and update this committee on the progress of the educational services provided in our facility. Leaders from North Star and the Anchorage School District began meeting in April to discuss the educational program needs, service delivery, and identifiable outcomes for the educational program. The Commissioner of Education attended the first couple of meetings to help set the guidelines and framework for further discussions. The meetings were attended by Mike Graham and Linda Carlson from the Anchorage School District, and Evelyn Alsop and Mike Lyons from North Star. As the meetings progressed, the district brought in Mike Henry and Mr. Jerry Cochi, acting principal for special schools. Sadly, Mr. Cochi passed away in December. His passing was unexpected, and he will be sorely missed as his enthusiasm for education was extremely contagious. During the onset of the meetings, both parties recognized that communication and collaboration was vital to improving the educational service for this population and for the continued success of the educational program. As of January, there have been over 20 meetings between the two organizations. Representatives from the Education Subcommittee visited the North Star facilities on September 16, 2015. Cameron Perez Verdia, the Anchorage School District School Board President, visited on December 4, 2015, and the Commissioner of Education visited on January 12, 2016. From the onset of our discussions, North Star has come to each meeting with an agenda that was previously emailed to the Anchorage School District for their input, so each organization could be productive and collaborative in the time allotted for discussions. My colleague, Mike Lyons, outlined successes of the school year so far, and for those we are truly thankful. Students are receiving more instructional time, and the increase in teachers has allowed this to be successful. Sadly, I must report that we are still struggling to clearly identify how, if at all, students' transcripts are being aligned with sending schools. This alignment is important to the student being able to matriculate toward graduation with his or her like peers. We are continuing to wait on all students having course schedules. A clear course schedule is important to ensure all classes are congruent with resident schools, as placing students in courses they do not need or that are not required for graduation becomes a source of frustration for the student and family and can lead to added stress and ultimately not having the credits to graduate. To date, we are unsure how or if outcomes are tracked and recorded. The use of outcomes linked with curriculum design are important to the success of the educational program as they allow administrators and teachers to identify the areas of growth and those needing added structure and alignment. In each meeting with the Anchorage School District, we have asked for a program budget. Sadly, we still do not have a program budget. Having the budget clearly outlined would allow for a complete master schedule and development of a curriculum plan for the program. The process for transitions of students returning to sending school programs is not defined. These transitions allow students to be successful in their return to the resident school and community. The district developed an individualized learning plan, or ILP, that would be implemented for each student upon admission, and to date, it is not being fully utilized. This ILP would benefit parents in sending schools upon a child's transition back to the resident school. AIMS web testing to assess the areas of strength and need in the elementary school population is not occurring like it does in other programs throughout the district. We are lacking a clear curriculum assessment and plan. Assessing the curriculum and developing a curriculum plan are standard operating procedures for schools. These assessment tools allow evaluation of academic programs so schools can meet the expectations of accrediting educational agencies and state and local stakeholders. The addition of the principal and transition counselor were greeted with great anticipation as we eagerly looked forward to the added administrative oversight of the program. However, we have no administrative plan that outlines the functions or schedules of the added administrators in which to share with families, therapists, and resident school districts. This is needed to provide communication and understanding of processes within the program. Each of the above areas of continuing need are all ordinary operational procedures for schools. Although improvement was made in certain parts of the educational program, we are still far from resolving the educational inequity of this population. Still today, students receiving mental health treatment in North Star are not being given the opportunity to achieve the same educational progress as their like peers in the public school. Thank you, and I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Evelyn. See no questions at this time, so we'll go to Anchorage School District. Mike Graham, if you would identify yourself for the record and then go ahead and give us your testimony.
Sure, thank you very much. This is Mike Graham. I'm the Chief Academic Officer with the Anchorage School District. You hear me all right?
With loud and clear, please proceed.
All right, very good. And so you know, I have with me Linda Carlson, who is our Assistant Superintendent for Instructional Support as well. So, Chairman Keller, members of the committee, we want to thank you for the opportunity to respond here and to testify. As you've heard, North Star Behavioral Health did bring forward some concerns, and we were charged almost a year ago with meeting with them to see what we could do to partner, collaborate, and effectively meet the educational needs of students in their treatment centers. As you've heard, Commissioner Hanley did meet with us a couple of times, kind of helped us get things started, and since that time we have established what I would deem as a very positive working relationship with North Star Behavioral Health, despite what you may have heard here today, as well as the rest of the programs that constitute what the Anchorage School District refers to as special schools. Mike Lyons and Evelyn Alsop are the individuals we have worked most closely with, and they brought forward a number of concerns. In all honesty, many of their concerns about the of the educational program did have some merit. As a district, we have, I believe, stepped forward with a good faith effort to establish an educational program that allows students' academic learning to continue while they're in treatment, and I would say is on par with what they are receiving in their other schools. To highlight a few of those things that have been put into place this school year, some of this you did hear, about transition plans being in place for students returning to their home schools. Individualized learning plans have been put in place for all residential students. We have not got them all done with the acute yet, the acute students who acute care who come in for a short amount of time, but all of those who, to the best of my knowledge, who are in residential care do have an individualized learning plan. You heard something about the technology. Because kids are coming in various places, we do use an online curriculum to a large extent. And yes, they did not have what they needed. Since the time we've ordered technology, installed technology in their facilities, they, to the best of my knowledge, 92 new computers as well as 10 radio controllers or wireless access points, if you will, as well as kind of rewiring that building to make sure that they are stable and can handle that. We did create, as you heard, a full-time principal position. That was Jerry Cucci, yes, and he unfortunately died in December. Actually, a new principal should be approved at the school board meeting tonight so we can continue moving forward. That has been a hiccup week that nobody foresaw coming. We've increased the counselor position to a full-time transition counselor, as well as teacher positions, and I think you heard that as well. We've gone from 6 full-time equivalent teachers to 10, which allowed us to also not only provide a full-day educational program, but you're sure we had all teachers being highly qualified in the core areas of instruction for which they're assigned. We also created a special schools office in the ASD Ed Center so we could keep track of things better as well as provide the accountability for overseeing that. And probably one of the bigger things that's happened is regular meetings, weekly, monthly, quarterly meetings between the Anchorage School District and North Star Behavioral Health. One of the concerns that we have with moving forward comes with, and I think you heard from Evelyn that they did give us a copy of a cooperative agreement that they proposed between the school district and them and in order for them to provide the educational program. Some of the under responsibilities of the school district, this would be a little concerning if we are not actually the ones providing the educational service, which include provide a direct line administrator responsible for technical assistance, including applicable district training, curriculum design, program implementation. The district administrator would also ensure compliance with Department of Education rules and regulations pertaining to alternative education programs. The second point was to disseminate information about and assist in the development and adoption of promising educational practices for students in mental health facilities or state support facilities. Their third one was coordinate activities for the identification, location, and evaluation of all children served in educational programs and mental health facilities. The fourth point for the district would be to serve as the fiscal intermediary in collecting state and federal per-pupil education funds. The fifth point, we would remit 95% of the full-time equivalency funding, including a portion of federal funding, to North Star Behavioral Health. The sixth would provide up to 10 days of mainframe student information system training to North Star employees at no cost. That would be, I suppose, our Zangle, our student information systems, and how to do those. And the seventh, one of the ones that serves as one of the biggest concerns in this also, is serve as a local education agency and provide general supervision and educational services through a review of the special education procedures for providing education programs to determine compliance with provisions of the agreement and applicable state and school district education rules. Those, basically in a nutshell, we have the concern that if we are responsible for all of that, and as the LEA, from IEPs to making sure that that they are compliant with what the state requires, we believe we should be the ones doing that. The other part is a little bit of the concern with HB 102 itself, should that go through, and we did discuss this with both Mike and Evelyn, a little bit of that concern that this becomes a litigious matter. If the Anchor School District did not agree with the contract and couldn't come to an agreement on that, that it could go to the commissioner, to deed, to take a look at. And if they didn't agree with it, it would then go on to Superior Court. We don't think this is the way we ought to be going about trying to meet the educational needs of kids. We totally agree that everybody there, that all the students in treatment centers need a quality education. We want them to move forward to certainly the extent they can, so when they transition back, they are online and they haven't fallen behind. I think we have worked very well with North Star. I think we have made huge inroads this year, both in the staffing and in the programs. It's a little disheartening to hear them talk about all the problems we've had and how nobody has schedules or anything. That simply is not true. All of our students had schedules this year. The students, to the best of my knowledge, all have individualized education plans, so I'm not sure where that is coming from. But we do believe we are meeting their needs and believe we can, and actually have been very, very complimentary of Evelyn and North Star. They have worked with us, and I think that collaboration has been positive, since there is both the treatment aspect, the mental health aspect that they are dealing with, and, of course, the educational side. Anchor Schools has gone, as I think you've heard, from we now provide a full day educational program for all students, and that was not true in the past. That was not true in the past. So there were some, we were lacking in some things, some oversight, but we have certainly put a lot into it. And like I said, I think Linda Carlson can probably speak a little bit more to some of the concerns that you heard about IEPs and special education and what is happening with that.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do, before I go to Representative Christ Tompkins for questions, I'm going to ask Linda to make your comments so that we have them all out there. But I want to put some sideboards on it as a chair. We have 20 minutes left, roughly, to the meeting here, and this is not the time that we're not going to have time to do all the points and counterpoints or have a debate. What we're doing is getting a picture of what the direction this committee is proposing to go with 102. So the next time we get together, we'll go through the bill section by section carefully, in that this is just a general perspective meeting. So, Linda, did you have something you wanted to add there to Mike?
Yes, and thank you, Representative Keller, Representative Vasquez, and other members of the House Education Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on this bill this morning. I do want to also thank North Star Behavioral and Mike and Evelyn. I've greatly appreciated the enhanced partnership we've experienced this past year. We've also come to better understand the differences that Anchorage has between ourselves and Fairbanks and some of the other communities that are often referenced too. Here in Anchorage, we are serving not only the long-term care students that are in North Star Behavioral, but also the students from all over Alaska in acute care. and this is significant. There remains some also, in addition to that, you know, talking about the IEPs, we want to talk a little bit about the equity to special needs students. That is of utmost concern to us. Last year, we addressed 90 out-of-district IEPs. Those were students in acute care, and they represented, on average, 17 to 20 days in stay here in Anchorage. Through our own district attorney, we decided that it, through their advice, writing students' IEPs are not, who we don't regularly serve is not really a good idea. So to meet our obligations under IDEA, our special education staff call each of those parents of the children in acute care and let them know that we accept their child's IEP with the educational service plan as written. We also discuss that realistically, because they are in acute care and they sometimes miss classes and they have other more pressing needs, that we will, with them, collaborate on the goals that they deem most important to address at that time. So their goals are written, and those are the goals we work on. So we are not doing it on consult basis at all. So I'd also like to just talk about HB 102. And I had mentioned there are still some significant concerns. Residential treatment facilities anticipate that under HB 102 they could essentially run their own education program with ASD and other districts simply being the supplier of funds. One concern would be passing public funds to a private for-profit entity to do the very thing that local school districts are already obligated to provide. For residential treatment centers in Anchorage, the Anchorage School District is responsible and is held accountable as the LEA, or the Local Education Agency, under IDEA and Alaska Statute 1430-186, which states special education and related services shall be provided by the city school district in which a treatment facility is located for a child with a disability placed at a facility. Furthermore, a school district shall develop an IEP for special education and related services for each eligible child with a disability. This is mandatory language under AS 1430-278. The bottom line is this. ASD cannot be hands-off with regard to the educational program, nor would we want to be, as we receive students enrolled in the district. ASD has both legal and policy obligations to its students. And again, I say I thank you very much for this opportunity, and we'd be happy to address any questions you may have.
Okay. So to the committee here, we're going to ask questions of Mike Graham and Linda Carlson, if you like. And I have one at least, but we're going to go to Representative Christ Tompkins.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Gordon. In mentioning some of the concerns you saw as potential aspects of the contract, I was wondering if we're working from the same version of the legislation. And I know there was a new committee substitute offered, but Mr. Gordon, are you working from legislation with a work number / I?
For just a clarification, is Mr. Graham?
Oh, excuse me.
That's all right. That's all right. And on that topic, just again for the record, we're on version India was adopted by the committee, and that's proof. The other FUPA there is proof positive that even though you have intelligent, efficient, hardworking staff, the chair can still screw up. the word draft was clearly marked in my book, and I even had a fresh copy here, and I missed it. But the question, Mike, is: have you looked at version India of HB 102?
I cannot tell you that we are looking at version India. We are looking right now to see if we can figure out. We are looking at the version that was submitted to us by Mike and Evelyn to take a look at originally as we were preparing for this.
Well, it's really relatively unimportant at this point, but we want you to look at it, and then we'll come back before the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That might explain. I was failing to track a few points he was making with the legislation in front of me. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mike or Linda? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm understanding that Anchorage School District is saying, you know, that they have the legal and policy perspective here. And so as you analyze this, I mean, we were talking somewhat about lawsuits. Would you also comment back to us on if you are not providing or if you don't provide adequate instruction and don't go through a contract for someone else to provide adequate educational instruction, does that then open the Anchorage School District to the legal impairment of not providing adequate instruction? And so, I think we look at this both ways, and I just want to make sure that we are getting adequate instruction to kids, and where that liability comes down could be expensive. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last question for Mr. Graham, if I've got that right. I was wondering what, with whatever federal funds may be made available for these students with special needs and students with ILPs or IEPs, choose your initialism, what is the per-pupil funding that we're talking about for these students, ballpark? And I appreciate there may be a range.
Do you have a question or answer to that right off the cuff, Mike, or not?
Yes, I think Linda gave you that specific.
If students are level 3 funding, which in this case there are very few of those students residing in North Star Behavioral, but those would be about $78,000 per pupil in a level 3 funding. Many of our students at North Star Behavioral are not necessarily special education students, too, so they would get the regular per pupil allocation. And then with the addition of special education funding, which funnels into the general fund and then is disseminated to the special education department, that results in, I guess, an increase of a few hundred. I could get that for you. It depends on whether students get just special education service and or related services. So the number fluctuates depending on the complexity of their needs.
Thank you.
I have a question. I think, Mike, you said there's a full-time counselor. How much time do they actually spend in the facility? What are their hours? Are they regular? Are they posted so the students and the teachers have easy access to this full-time counselor?
No, the counselor doesn't do counseling as you might think of in a regular school. That's Evelyn and her staff. You know, they are the experts there when it comes to the issues and things the kids are dealing with. This counselor is more of a transition counselor who helps with the determining what it is the student needs educationally. Is supposed to be, I believe, helping with the case management and coordinating also with the homeschools, both directions. I think she is over there at least twice a week. I do not have her schedule in front of me. And she also helps with the other programs that are not North Star Behavioral Health as well. So it isn't like she's there for kids to come see the counselor so much as more an intermediary with helping make sure that with that transition that we know what the student needs academically and seeing that through.
Okay, a follow-up then, if I could, on that, if the counselor purposes transition, how describe to us how the child is tracked after they leave the facility, and does the counselor then also function with wherever the student goes after being in the facility, or how does that work?
Well, once they would be in contact with the home school or wherever it is that the student is going next to let them know what's been accomplished, what credit they have attained or those kind of issues, what their needs are to the best that they can. We don't get into whatever their treatment is. We don't really have even access to those records. So they would follow that to give that information to the home school. From there, we don't do long-term tracking of those kids.
Representative Drummond, I almost called you Commissioner Drummond again.
Hey, I like
it. It was a long couple days.
I'm not sure at this time I'd accept that.
Representative Drummond, just to explain, I'm on chair of a commission, it's not the commissioners as in Commissioner Hanley. But there's 12 commissioners around here. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Graham, thank you very much for calling in this morning, and also Ms. Carlson. Mike, I believe you stated you were reading from a contract that North Star is seeking to follow if this bill was to pass and ASD was to be contracted with. Do we have a copy of this contract? There's a lot of really interesting information in there, and I would like to see that. I'd like to see that contract.
We would be happy to send you a copy of it. I don't.
This is Mike Graham. Just for the record, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. All right. Excuse me. what I was reading from was a contract that the Evelyn submitted to the school district in December, and I wanted to know if we'd sign that, or if I would certainly take that forward to the board and to the superintendent, which I did. I did take it forward and shared it with them.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no further questions, it's tempting to comment. I realize it is for me, but I would just try to limit it, getting us to the next step here. But Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess I'm hoping that we go out to all the people that submitted comments. We've got a big packet of comments, but I think they're all on the old versions. And so it's very confusing. So if we could have your staff email all of those people and ask them for new comments based on version I, that would be really very helpful to my consideration of the fact.
I didn't see my staff shudder, so I think we're okay. Representative Vasquez?
Yeah. I'd like to congratulate the progress that has been made to date, but it's very obvious, at least when we went and visited as a subcommittee to North Star facilities, that there were still great needs. There were not enough computers. The broadband was not sufficient. North Star had been promised, I believe we met in August, they had been promised the broadband by November. Well, by November is almost the end of the whole semester. I believe it was the consensus of the committee that was a long time to wait for some progress on getting broadband. That's just an example. But, you know, when we started on this road, it was quite shocking, personally, to find out that these children, very much at risk, we're only getting at most 3 or 4 hours of instruction basically in front of a computer. That was totally shocking and totally unacceptable. So although we've made progress, it appears to me that we're still not where we need to be, especially when these children are truly at risk for different reasons. I like to put on the record that I started writing, even before the subcommittee was formed, at least 2 extensive letters. It was very painstaking. It was painstaking to get information, frankly, from the school district, the type of information that should have been more readily available. And I will share those letters with the committee. I have new staff, so we're getting realigned here, but one letter was 15 pages plus, another letter was at least 7-8 pages, but I just find it frustrating that the progress has been very slow, to waste, for example, a whole semester without having appropriate broadband is just not acceptable. It just isn't.
If I could step in, Vice Chair Vasquez, I did next meeting, I will give you the opportunity to, as chair of the subcommittee, to give a report. You have the option, and that would be great if we could.
I don't have any more comments to state at this point. I'm just saying.
But even so, if the other two members want to talk to Representative Vasquez, we can start there if you like, whatever works. So, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a concern. We just received, I think all of us in the in our emails today, education commissions of the state, which gives news from around the different education issues around the United States, and it was talking about Idaho and their poor graduation rates, and then the internal analysis found that those that were in their virtual technology section only had a 20% graduation rate, and that was bringing down the entire state. And I'm kind of hearing that we're instituting a virtual technology school, a virtual education school, and so I want to make sure that if we are proposing advancing, and yet we're advancing into something, I want to make sure that what we're advancing into has some efficacy behind it, some success behind it, and not going to be at, you know, almost half of the graduation rate of alternative high schools and schools, much less the graduation performance of the regular schools. So, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to put that on the record, that, that I want to make sure that as these contracts or as this goes forward, we're instituting a procedure that we have some indication we'll be successful in advancing these students' education. Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm pretty confident that either Mike or Evelyn would love to respond to that, but we're not going to do it now, and but it's on the record. And so what we're going to do is leave the testimony open and then set it aside. But Representative Drummond.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the concerns that I have about this whole process is that North Star runs a number of facilities nationally. If they run schools in these facilities on the order of what they're expecting Anchorage School District to contract with them or to provide, I would love to see results in those other schools that North Star runs. I'm told that ASD has asked for proof of North Star's capability of running an educational program within their walls in their other facilities, since they're not currently doing here. I also have a lot of concerns about who's responsible for providing internet service in a hospital situation. The hospital belongs to North Star. I'm not quite sure why the anchor and they have housing for, I believe it's 200, a total of 200 students. Why would the school district be responsible for installing internet service, bringing broadband in, as well as bringing the computers, if these folks are running a hospital for school-age children? It seems to me that would be their responsibility to provide, knowing that they have these students in their care and needing to receive school. So there's a lot of issues that need to be worked out here, and obviously, Mr. Chair, this is not the time to do it.
Okay, with that question, then, we're going to set the bill aside, and we're adjourned at 10 o'clock.